Yet the other anger he's talking about is in Ecclesiastes 11:10. So we have 11:10 and we have 1:18. Now, we must look for the universal definition of anger and then find out what the subdivision is. There's a subdivision here. That's clear. So a person that knows how to think, who's been trained in the method of analysis of the Talmud, knows immediately how to approach this. The way you approach it is, you have two things, there's a contradiction. The solution to the contradiction is very simple. There's one heading, and then there is a subdivision. And once you have a subdivision, there's no contradiction because they're two different things. Now let's just apply that method, and you'll see how it works. Let's understand what anger is. That's the first step. Anger, when does a person get angry? Let's take a common situation where a person gets angry. Why is he angry? A person is angry because reality doesn't correspond to his or her wishes. That's what anger is. Anger is when a person, why does a person get angry? Frustrated, angry. A person gets angry because things aren't going his way or her way. That causes anger. So the average person gets quite angry often. Doesn't always have to express it, but you can be angry inside also. But the reason for the anger is things aren't going their way. Something goes wrong. There's no need to enumerate. I mean, every one of us knows there are innumerable situations in life where things go against us, against our wishes. Against your wishes, people get angry. So there, King Saul, that kind of anger is what he's discussing in 11:10. All right? There he says, this is very bad. He says, remove anger from your heart, and you'll be removing an evil from your flesh. Now, what he means is as follows, two things. He means that a person that gets angry, for any reason whatsoever, is really a fool. And that's why he mentions another place, because anger resides in the bosom of fools. Why? Because a person who is a fool is myopic, he focuses on one event, and he looks at it and says, why did this happen this way? This could have happened another way. It could have happened exactly the way I'd like it to happen. Okay? That's a fool. A wise person looks at the entire scheme of things. And if you look at the scheme of things, you'll see that things cannot, if you understand how things work, you can have a number of things. If you're intelligent, you have a higher number of things that are in your favor. If you're less intelligent, more, because you're not really doing anything with reality. But even an intelligent person, the right moves, is going to have to find that things do not go his way because of the fact that there's a reality out there, and reality is guided by certain causes, and these causes aren't always in your favor. Okay? So therefore, once a person understands that, he will never get angry. There's no reason to ever get angry. If something goes against your wishes, all this means is you should study the situation logically and then see what can be done to make it more favorable. Now, either you can do something to make it more favorable, then you do it, and if you cannot, then you must accept reality. A fool doesn't accept reality. A fool doesn't realize that there's a time when this is the way reality is, and that's it. A fool always thinks they could do anything. In today's society, what do we teach people? What do we teach children? What do we teach adults? We always say, you can do anything. That's the philosophy. That's the philosophy. Okay? That is a very silly, unrealistic philosophy. That philosophy causes what King Solomon calls anger. Okay? Because if a person thinks, a person is taught that they could do anything, then when things don't go their way, so then they think it's something which is a sign of their own inability. They get very frustrated, very angry. But if a person is taught you cannot do everything, there are certain things you can do, certain things you cannot do, and what you cannot do, you must accept. When you cannot do something, you must accept reality. That is a wise person. So therefore, he says, anger resides in the bosom of fools, because a fool thinks he could change reality when he can't, and a fool is an individual who just expects reality to correspond to his wishes, and therefore he experiences anger. But a wise person would never. That's why he says, now he says, the evil from your flesh. What does he mean by the evil from your flesh? This is another, here you have another theory of Ecclesiastes, and that's one which I think today most of the medical profession would agree with, and that is that when a person is upset internally, is psychologically upset, this is going to affect his physical health as well. Maimonides writes that way, and Maimonides was very big on that. And today they're starting to agree with that. They studied people that live to be very old age and haven't found that they do aerobics. Many of them even smoke and they eat things that they consider to be improper from a health standpoint. But the only thing they have found among those people is they have a certain attitude, which is very positive, and it is a psychologically healthy attitude. So there he says, this is what Ecclesiastes says, the one thing that is extremely unhealthy is anger. Because anger means you can't accept reality, and you're constantly battling reality. That stress of that battle is what destroys the flesh. It destroys you physically as well as psychologically. So that's why he mentions those two points. Now let's get back to the other Ecclesiastes. In 1, the last verse in 1, there he says, the more intelligent you are, the more angry you are. We just said that that's the most stupid thing to do, is to be angry. It means you can't accept reality. Okay. Over here, he's talking about a different kind of anger. The kind of anger he's talking about over here is, it shares a common thing with the other anger, but it's quite different. And that is the philosophical anger. See, philosophical anger is different. Philosophical anger is when a person recognizes a certain truth that intrinsically goes against what the nature of man is. That's a different kind of an anger. That's an anger that stems from knowledge. Over here, he's saying something different. Here he's telling you that when you analyze, as we mentioned before, when you analyze human life, what a human being needs, and what the various lifestyles offer him, you'll find out that all they offer him is emptiness and frustration. So there, when he's speaking about anger, he means the philosophical knowledge that reality doesn't conform to, in general, to what man in general is searching for. Okay? There again, it's the same definition of anger in the sense that anger is when reality doesn't conform, but there are two types of not conforming. One is on a personal level where I experience the frustration. The other one is when I look at the world and I analyze man. That's a philosophical, that's not personal. That's philosophical anger. If I study the world and I see that things just don't work out, I'm intelligent enough to see that these lifestyles are not giving you what they are cracked up to give you. When you recognize that, that's a different kind of an anger. That's an anger that's based upon knowledge. There he says that is very intelligent, because the unintelligent person is the one who is duped into thinking that this lifestyle is going to give him the satisfaction, and he or she will spend years and years trying to attain that elusive satisfaction and think that they will gain happiness, but they will never gain happiness. And the reason is because they're always looking, again, the fool always looks at a segment of reality, the small picture. They're looking at the small picture. Every time they tried something, it didn't work, they say, well, that didn't work for this reason. Let me try again. They keep on trying. Again, their life was really a total waste. But if they were intelligent, they'd be able to analyze the big picture, the broad picture, and then they would see that intrinsically this can't work. Okay? If I think to myself that what's going to make me happy is a new home, a new car, an increase in salary, but then if I think to myself, one second, didn't I once get a new home? I felt the same way before. But that didn't last too long. Didn't I get a new car? Well, that didn't last too long. I got a raise. How come that didn't make me happy? If a person just looks at the small picture, they will simply every time just, all they could do is be involved in the immediate. But a person that analyzes and thinks, they will see, one second, if that didn't work before, why should it work now? There's something wrong here. This is just not going to work. I'm just directing myself in the wrong path. So that he calls a wise person. Look at the big picture of reality and study philosophy honestly, even though it goes against what that person desires life to be. That anger is an anger that results from knowledge. He says the fool won't have such kind of an anger. Because the fool is only involved in each step fully at the time. and can't pick his head out above that little step. So he doesn't, all he sees is that little step. So he just keeps trying, and he fails, keeps trying. But the wise man looks at the whole picture. He says, just a second, this is failing, not because of the details in this case. It just can't work. There's something wrong here. And then he sees that it does not work. Then he has a philosophical anger. Okay? This is what, that's the answer to the contradiction. There are two types of anger. There's philosophical anger and there's personal private anger. If a person gets angry at his spouse because the spouse didn't give them didn't prepare dinner properly, that's a small-minded, foolish individual, a person who is just has not learned either to try to improve the situation or accept reality. There's no room for anger in human life. Personal anger there's no room for. Only a fool experiences that. A wise man never. By the way, the Talmud, the Talmud and Maimonides discuss various virtues. And a lot of emotions are applicable in various times. Sometimes you have to be haughty, you have to be tough. Sometimes you can't. Okay? And various emotions, the Talmud and the Torah never really tells you to ban any emotion. It says, you have to know when. Sometimes you have to be aggressive. Sometimes you have to be passive. Depends on what it is. It always depends on the situation based upon your intellect and your understanding. But when it comes to anger, everybody says there's no place ever for anger. Anyone that ever gets angry, as a matter of fact, the Talmud says, a person who gets angry, it's as if he has served, because the purpose of idolatry is to try to control reality. Why did the idolater bring his offerings to his god? To propitiate the gods in order to get the gods to respond to his wishes. It's a wish fulfillment. They recently, I just saw on television about 2 weeks ago, they had these, I think it was these Indians, they had this god that they were claimed was milk. Okay? it's an illusion, but they really believed it, and they were bringing milk to this god. So they interviewed some of the people that were doing this, filing by, bringing the milk, and they said, well, why are you doing this? So they said, well, we believe if the god consumes the milk, then he'll give us all our wishes. Okay? But that's what idolatry is. Idolatry is an attempt to use the gods for wishes. The same thing is true of a person who gets angry, because a person who gets angry cannot accept God's reality. He feels that he wants his wish to overcome reality. That's idolatry. So that's why Thomas pointed out. But there is never any room for a person to get angry. If a person gets angry, right away he's doing something evil. There's nothing to question. That's it. The only thing the Talmud says that a person can do, Maimonides, is a person can mock anger. Sometimes a person has to appear angry. For instance, a great individual, a leader, sometimes has to appear angry in order to cause people to come to their senses if they are doing something which is wrong. That's something else. Okay. But to be angry, to get angry, is never right. Okay, but that's personal anger. But philosophical anger is very good. It shows intelligence. It shows you looking at the whole picture. You see there's a problem here. That brings out a certain attitude towards reality, which is in conformity with man's wishes. That's not a personal. That's a philosophical anger. Philosophical anger is good. The Torah differentiates many times between a philosophical emotion. Okay, it's not really an emotion, I'm just using that term, and a personal one. For instance, one is not permitted to hate. Hate is considered to be an evil emotion. Yet, philosophical hatred, the Torah insists on. For instance, the hatred against Amalek. And that's a commandment. One is supposed to hate Amalek. That's written openly in the Bible. Why? Because the hatred of Amalek is not a personal hatred. It's not that you hate your friend because he may have slighted you. That's a personal hatred. But the hatred of Amalek is a philosophical hatred. It means if you love mankind, you must hate that which destroys mankind, and that's the false ideas of Amalek. So philosophical hatred is something the Torah promotes. Personal Torah considers to be an evil. So you have this differentiation in other cases also. All right? Now, let me just get to the basic question that I think is probably the most important question about Koheles, and that is the first thing I mentioned was lifestyles. Second thing is his method is through contradiction, and we'll come back to it. I just want to give the basic headings. But the third thing I wanted to mention, which I think is perhaps the most important thing, and that is the question of why do we need a philosophy altogether? What is King Solomon doing here? Does King Solomon believe in God? Does he believe in the Torah? If he does, then there's no reason to philosophize. What do we have to study all this for? What did he write all this for? The Torah is very simple. He believes God exists. He believes the Torah is true. Just do what the Torah says, and that's it. Okay? What do we philosophize about? What purpose is there in philosophizing? As a matter of fact, I would say that philosophizing is a little bit of an apostasy. Why? Because don't you believe God knows better than you do? Well, obviously. So he told you what to do. So what are you going to think about? There's nothing to think about. Okay? So that question, as a matter of fact, which would seem to remove the entire need for an Ecclesiastes, all right? Not only is that a question from a logical standpoint, he himself mentions it. If you take a look at Ecclesiastes 12:13, what does he say? He says the conclusion is, I try to be literal, the conclusion is that everything has been heard. Meaning to say, I heard all the arguments already. But he says, what do we do? He says, God you should fear, and his commandments you should keep, because this is all of man. All right? So what is he saying? He's saying basically that we have all the questions, we heard all these points, but the bottom line is, fear God and keep his commandments. Well, I mean, if that's the case, why bother with 12 chapters? I mean, actually, he didn't have chapters. That's the Christian thing. But it's a long Megillah, okay? It's a big Megillah. And what's the need for this Megillah, for this book, for this writing? He himself says, the final word is, you heard it. You heard all the questions, but the fact is, you fear God and do his commandments. We could have done that before he started, and he wouldn't have to write all this, and we wouldn't have to study all this. Okay, that is really the most important. If we don't understand that, the answer to that question, then you really can't even begin to read Ecclesiastes because you wouldn't understand the basis for it. And the truth of the matter is that most, probably all religions really do believe that. That's why they don't encourage any kind of philosophical investigation. On the contrary, you have your catechisms, you state what you believe in, and that's it. There's no need to go any further. The religions believe their God knows what is best, and once we have that catechism, once we have that instruction, just do it. Okay? Now King Solomon is deviating from that principle. On the contrary, he's writing all these things and he's analyzing all these lifestyles. That sounds like a philosopher or someone. A psychologist or both. I mean, what is this? I mean, you have the Word of God. What do you need all this for? Okay? That is the question that a religious person... Okay. Now, the answer to that question... Let me just answer that question. I think we'll... Okay. Yeah, because the answer to that question is really found. And as I always say, everything goes back to Torah. Without Torah, the five books, you don't have anything. And anything that's written anywhere is always an extension of those five books. The five books of the Torah are the absolute Word of God. And the prophets are really different than the five books. I'm going to get back to that also, the Talmud statement. They're different. It's important to understand how they're different, but you cannot put them in the same class. Okay. For instance, the Talmud says they wished to take the book of Ecclesiastes and they say not ban it, but to place it in Geniza, which means that it will be removed from circulation. Descriptively we'll use the word ban, but we're using it descriptively. It's not really the same thing. It's a special halachic process. But they wish to ban the book of Ecclesiastes. Now the question is, how can you do such a thing? Isn't that the written word? Isn't it in the Bible? You can't ban the book of Deuteronomy. Okay? And obviously you can't. And the reason is because the five books of Moses are the only thing that we have from God through Moses. Everything else is written in a totally different framework. I'll explain what that framework is. And it's not a question of what is true, what is not true. That's not the question. Okay? If a prophet says something, it's obviously true. But that does not place it on a par in any way with the Word of God, the five books of Moses. And another aspect of what I'd like to I'd like to take up, because I think it's another important topic. Okay? But right now, that would be topic four. But right now, topic, and that is the question of what is the, how could you have philosophy, what's the need for philosophy, and what right do we have even to philosophize, okay? Now, here I mentioned that we must go back to the book, the Torah, the book of Exodus, all right? And here we have, in Exodus, we have, again, a contradiction, all right? Contradictions are good because they make you think. There's no real contradiction. It just appears like a contradiction. If you're intelligent, you sense there's something here. Now take a look, for instance, at this 14:31. There it says, "And Israel saw the great hand which God performed in Egypt, and the nation of God, and they believed in God and his servant Moses." Okay, so that would seem to be that happened after the splitting of the sea, right? All right, that's one. Now here's another verse. Later, that was in 14. Now we go to 19. In 19:9, it says, "God said to Moses, Behold, I am coming to you in the thickness of the cloud." Why? That was Sinai. Why? In order that the people should hear when I speak with you, and also in you will they believe forever. Which means they will believe that Moses is God's servant, truly. Okay, now the question is just a second. Doesn't it say before that the people believed in God? Why did God have Sinai in order to accomplish that? They already believed in God. It says so right in the Bible. Okay? Well, the answer to that question is that Torah is not like a religion. See, a religion just tries to get people to believe certain six things which they establish, and they want the followers to just accept these things. If followers accept these things, then that's it. They're in a group, okay? And that's a club, and that's all. That's all they want. The Torah is a religion of truth, and it's a religion of truth. And a religion of truth means that man must be functioning using his energies, his mind, his psyche, in a very active manner. Essentially, a very intellectual manner. Okay, and you must be able to move ahead in the world of ideas. That's the emphasis of the Torah. So it's a certain kind of activity, the Torah's religion. Now, when the Torah says believe in something, okay, so belief over here means more than just thinking something is true. The Torah is very, very cautious because the energies of the Torah recognizes that the energies of the mind are very dynamic. There's a lot of dynamics. Let me explain what I mean. A person can accept something as true and do that thing based on the truth, but yet the mind isn't satisfied. Like, for instance, if a doctor gave you a pill and said, "This pill is going to cure you," all right, you're going to accept it. It's true. I mean, he's a Harvard grad, and he's telling you this is true, a medical man, of course. But if you had bad reactions, you start questioning. One second, maybe something's wrong here. All right. And even if you didn't have bad reactions, in the back of your mind, there is some kind of an unsureness. But that doesn't mean you think it's not true. You obviously think, it is. I have to live according to this. This is correct. But it doesn't mean you're intellectually satisfied. Now, the physician who understands the medication, he's intellectually satisfied. Not only does he know it's true, he knows authority, he knows it's true because he really understands the body and he really understands how the medicine works. Okay? Two types of knowledge. One kind of knowledge tells you something is true. Both tell you something is true. But one tells you something is true and yet you don't understand the reason something's bothering you in your mind. And the other one tells you it's true, but not only that, it also explains how and why it's true. Then your mind is satisfied. Now, what the Bible is teaching us is that the miracles in Egypt and the miracles of the splitting of the sea, those miracles, they were convincing. And the people accepted that it is true. There is a God, and Moses is a servant. That's true. But in the back of their minds, there was still some kind. But there was still some kind of, I wouldn't say not on a kind of a frustration. There was something that they still were thinking. The mind was returning. In other words, when the mind's not satisfied, it may accept something, but it also is prodding to understand it more. See, the mind is still active. It's not satisfied. So God didn't want the people. They could have gone on like that, and it would also go on for generations and generations. No doubt about it. That was enough to establish the people, and that alone would have been plenty. You'd have all the miracles in Egypt and the splitting of the sea, and they would teach this to their children, and they would be able to have a Passover Seder just like we have now. Only one thing, there's only one problem. The point is that miracles, just miracles, even though you may be convinced something's true, the mind isn't satisfied. Sinai was given in order to satisfy the mind. Sinai was a different kind of miracle. There was a simple voice that came from the heavens that taught ideas, and this was a different kind of experience. Then there was nothing to think about. Then it wasn't just conviction, but the mind was satisfied. So you see, the Torah differentiates between two kinds of knowledge. One kind of knowledge is you may know something's true, but your mind's not satisfied. The other kind of knowledge, you know it's true, and your mind is satisfied. And God wanted the people to have not just knowledge that's true, he wanted their minds to be satisfied, because the entire Torah is a religion which engages and is very concerned about the human mind. So now, when we come back to Ecclesiastes, we can answer our question. Why does Ecclesiastes have to philosophize if you just look at the Bible? The Torah will tell you what to do. Okay, obviously you can't understand the Torah, so you go to the rabbis, they explain to you what Torah means, and you know what to do. No problem. The answer is that if a person does something, even though he knows it's true, but if he really doesn't understand why it's true...
Rabbi, we got 1 minute.
That's it? Okay.
Yeah.
If he doesn't understand why it's true, his mind isn't satisfied. And if his mind isn't satisfied, he can't function properly. That's why Sinai was necessary, because God wanted man to be able to function in a way that he could put all his energies into perfecting himself. And if your mind isn't satisfied, you cannot do that. That is why Ecclesiastes is necessary. That's why Solomon wrote his book, A Philosophy of Life. Okay, we'll stop here.